Oftentimes when I see articles about education or I see educational unions taking positions on certain issues that have nothing to do with education, I really am mystified as to why they feel that it's important to play that role. Then I often wonder whether or not they're as impactful as they once were, because in many respects and in many areas, it seems as though they have fallen out of favor. Joining us is Amber Northern, who is the Senior Vice President for Research at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Amber, you guys released a study on how strong are U.S. teachers unions, a state-by-state comparison. You did so back in 2012. And I think you guys just updated that original study here in 2026. If you could give us a template of 2012, and then, you know, what did the 26 study reveal?
Yeah, I think the bottom line is on a bunch of measures, teacher unions have gotten weaker over time. And I think the biggest area where we saw a declining number was in union membership in each state. So I think it was 34 states we actually saw the number of public teachers and teachers unions had declined since we did the report in 2012. And if you've got fewer members, you've got fewer resources, which sort of has a domino effect on, you know, how you can exert power in a state.
Do you get to feel, I see them taking stands on issues that have like completely nothing to do with education. Mm-hmm. Obviously, these are ideological stances that they're taking, which might reflect their membership. I don't know. But are you as mystified by that as I have been over the years? I'm kind of curious if that's having an eroding impact on them. Yeah.
I mean, I think in many cases, they poke their noses in areas that don't have anything to do with education, even though, you know, in many states they're allowed to, you know, collect fees from folks who aren't in the union. Although there was a big Supreme Court, law that was passed that basically curbed their ability to do that. So I think in many ways that's at least hampered some of their ability to poke their noses in things that aren't related. Presumably you'd think, okay, they're going to have to be a little bit more choosy about what they try to influence. At least that's the hope. But absolutely, they've been stretching beyond the bounds of education and using this money and other purposes, primarily to Democrat, for the advantage of sort of blue state priorities and Democrat priorities.
What do you think is driving this? I know the Janus decision that you referred to, the Supreme Court decision, is one that impacted it in a huge way. But what are other factors that might be driving this interest in belonging to educational unions down?
Yeah, I mean, I think in many ways, I mean, I can speak. I was a teacher at one time, and I remember the union rep coming into the, you know, faculty lunch lounge and telling us, you know, how we could get sued. And, you know, for something that happened in the classroom and, you know, how terrible it would be, you know, on a teacher's salary, how could we possibly fight a lawsuit? And that was at least back in the day, and I have feeling that that's largely still true, is that, you know, they could often scare new teachers into wanting to join for fear of a frivolous lawsuit that then they could not fight. So that's part of it. And I think also part of it is that teachers mistakenly believe that the unions are fighting, for causes that are good for them and for kids. And I think more often those causes, you know, as you just mentioned, don't have anything to do with education, but I don't think a lot of teachers realize that.
Interestingly, one of the things that the 2026 update revealed is that now more than ever, blue states, those that have, you know, a blue state that have a blue governor, both houses of their state legislature being blue, they seem to have the strongest unions in the country.
That's right. That's right. And that's a pattern that has not changed. I think, you know, the vast majority, I think we said it was either in the top 20 or 30, the states were all, you know, blue, not necessarily with a blue trifecta of both houses and the governorship, but, you know, historically had gone blue for many, many years. And so I think actually there were seven states that ranked in the top 10, both in 2012 and 2026. that were blue. That's California, Hawaii, Illinois, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, and Rhode Island. Again, maintaining that that strength in blue states.
You guys do a lot of studies on where these states stand in education. How do these states fare out typically?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's all over the board. Your listeners may be aware of the nation's report card or NAEP. And historically, we've seen Massachusetts do well, not so much anymore, but for a long time, Massachusetts was the top performing state. And ironically, you know, have a pretty strong teachers union. So I think there's really no, when we look at sort of how states do on national metrics and how weak or powerful their state union is, we often see very little correlation. Many times because there's a lot of other things that go into, you know, how kids do on a national test. But I think the very one important point to bring up is that unions aren't the only big player anymore in education, you know, policy and trying to influence what happens at the state level. We actually found that there are a lot more, we call them education advocacy reform organizations. We found a ton more of those that have sprung up in the last decade or so. I think we had 30 of them in 2012 when we first did the report, and now we have 180 or more of these education reform advocacy organizations. So they appear to be, you know, given the unions a little run for their money in terms of influencing state policy and education.
Do you think that these unions sometimes get a bad rap, both that they deserve and some that they don't?
Yeah, I think in some cases we, to my last point, we think that they are, you know, often the only boogeymen behind the curtain that are, you know, trying to sort of do things that aren't necessarily good for kids. But again, you know, there are other players at the table now. We actually call the report a crowded table. Because they aren't the only folks anymore that are influential. So yeah, I think that often the unions, you know, are the biggest ones standing in the way of positive changes for kids. But on the other hand, you know, we can't just lay it all at their feet, given that the politics of education are so much more complicated than they used to be when we looked at this in 2012.
One of the movements that I think has led to this as well, you correct me if I'm wrong, my gut tells me this notion of less parental involvement in decision making as it relates to the parents' kids. We've seen that run amok in California. We're seeing it run amok in other states as well. Many unions have embraced that. Many school systems have embraced that. It would seem to me that probably some of these activist organizations you're talking about are those that are fighting back against that. The movement away from the science of reading. I mean, you know, almost every report you guys have done and others have done, reading scores are abysmal in this country. I mean, they're getting worse.
Every year. No, they are. They are. And that's one of those things, honestly, where, you know, I think a lot of folks are finally realizing that we've got to teach reading differently because we've gotten away many years from the phonics-based approaches, which was ridiculous. And finally, I think, but it had less to do with unions than Emily Hanford Sold a Story podcast that just took off, you know, with the public and just really exposed how kids were being taught to read. So in that case, again, it's other players that are impacting education policy, sometimes for the good and sometimes not.
But, you know, it's interesting. I've not seen, and maybe you have, some of these issues that kind of take on like this, the qualities of some type of movement, for lack of a better term. I never see the unions kind of stand in the way of that, right? It's almost they embrace it and they're running wild with it. Not a lot of research on it, not a lot of science behind it. It's just like change for change's sake.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the biggest issue, and we at Fordham care a lot about school choice. And that's the issue where you see, you know, vehement opposition typically by unions, because obviously if you're in a charter school or a school of choice, you're, you know, very some of them have the ability to unionize, but most do not. And so, you know, if you're going to set up a school and they can't get to the members to be, you know, a part of their union, then obviously they don't want that school to exist. And so that's where, again, it's been a long fight. But thankfully, we've made some inroads in the school choice domain. And again, it's been a long time coming and a consistent advocacy by folks who are for school choice to fight against the union prerogatives.
I can, as I look at the whole educational picture in its totality, I understand a little bit about enrollments going down in universities.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit. I can point to some things of high schools, but grammar school, I don't understand mm-hmm. how they have these declining enrollments across this country, and there's almost no state that is safe and secure on that front. I mean, these enrollment mm-hmm. declines are they're yeah. incredible as they're being reported. I'm scratching my head. I'm like, well, where do they think that they're going to learn how to interact in society? How are they going to go about doing these things?
Right,
you know,
right.
Education is not just about information. It's about formation. You know, and it's
right,
like, I don't
right.
get it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think finally we're having to wake up to these declining birth rates and fertility rates that we're seeing not only in this country, but around the world. There's just sort of global infertility and declining birth rates. And so, yeah, I mean, I was just at a conference this past week where folks were saying, you know, how are we going to close schools without, you know, parents having a hissy fit? How do we do this so that we do it thoughtfully? We bring parents and communities along and let them sort of see the numbers, what we're looking at, and realize that we can't continue to keep all of these schools open because we're just, you know, bleeding money. And it's going to be a huge reckoning, I think, for many communities, you know, in the next 5-10 years. Many right now, it's knocking on their doorstep.
Amber, but correct me if I'm wrong, it's not just about the birth rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even those of are birthed that are there, there's a lower percentage of those kids actually enrolling in grammar school. Is that not correct?
I'm not familiar with those data. I'm very familiar with the data about, you know, the lowered rates of kids going to, you know, college. But we still have compulsory education, you know, in elementary school. So, you know, if parents can certainly in many states choose to homeschool their kids.
Right.
Yeah. And we do. We don't have great data on homeschool, but the homeschooling data that we do have, especially since COVID, we did see a jump in homeschooling rates. And in some sectors that has leveled back out. But the kids who many of the kids who were homeschooled didn't return.
Well, you know, the irony is, I think it's probably easier to shrink numbers of schools than it is to then have to flip and go back and increase the numbers. And I don't know that local government is in a position to do that. I don't know that you have local leaders willing to consume political capital to make these tough decisions either way, quite frankly.
Right, right. No, I totally agree. It is a very unpopular position to try to combine schools, for instance, combine small school districts together. I mean, every parent really wants their neighborhood school to stay open. And so, yeah, I mean, and to our larger point around unions, they're certainly not for, you know, having fewer schools and fewer teachers and that sort of thing. So it's only going to be made more difficult, I think, in the upcoming years.
For sure. Well, thank you for allowing me to meander just a little bit, but I love the work that you guys do, and I love reading the reports that you do. I find they're very thorough, they're relevant, and it's all about timing, and I think, you know, y'all are at the cusp of issuing these reports at the right time as well. And thank you for taking time out to spend with us this morning. Amber Northen, Senior Vice President for Research at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Have a great week.
Thank you again. Bye-bye. Thank
you. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.